I am your speaker captain. And our speaker tonight comes to us from Fresno. And she has 14 years of sobriety. Yeah. And her home group is Fresno Fellowship. And her favorite saying is, clean house, trust God, and help others. So come on up, Michelle B. Please welcome Michelle B.
Well, hello, everyone. My name's Michelle, and I am a very grateful recovering alcoholic. So I do have 14 years. My birthday is December 1st, 2006 is my sobriety year. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And my home group is Fresno Fellowship. I love Alcoholics Anonymous to the depths of my soul. I would not be here today if it weren't for Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power, who I choose to call God. So a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I moved here from Arizona to California in 1976. I'm the youngest of four kids. And when I moved here, I still played with dolls. I was 12 years old. And all the girls that I were meeting when I started school, they were so cool. Man, these California girls were so cool. You know, none of them played with dolls as far as I knew, because whenever we got together, it was like partying. These girls were already at 12 and 13 years old starting to drink. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, so not any out of respect to AA, but drugs are a part of my story too. And so I have a little dry goods in there. And at 13 years old, we were playing, you know, drinking games. I don't know if any of you know what the game called Buzz is, but it's where you sit in a circle and you start out with a number, and each person will say a number, and anything in a combination of 7 or 7 has to do with 7, like 7 or 14 or 21 or 17. When it gets to you, you're supposed to say Buzz. And if you don't say Buzz, then you're supposed to drink. And we were playing with hard liquor at 13 years old, 14. And I would not say Buzz on purpose because I wanted to chug. And I was blacking out at 13 years old. Now, I will say, I have no excuse to be alcoholic. I had a very loving family. Both parents, they separated when I got older, but my parents were, you know, together. I had three older siblings. We had great holidays. We had vacations. I had a great education. I had a roof over my head. I was never physically abused, mentally abused, sexually abused, nothing. Like, I had a really good life. So, you know, when I came into AA, I heard a lot of stories about, you know, people in their childhoods and not having parents and being abused and being in foster care. And I didn't have any of those. So, and also I'm the only alcoholic in my family. So I really honestly didn't know what I was doing to myself. And so I didn't cause a lot of damage in my drinking when I was younger. It wasn't until I got older. So I was functioning for many years. I finished school. I went through junior high school. I went through high school. I met my ex-husband when I was 15, and he was 22. And so alcohol was really easy for me to come by. And he was a big drinker, too. Well, we had a pretty rocky relationship, and it got even rockier when we would drink. We ended up getting married after about 8 years together. I think we got married when I was 22. And then I had my one and only child, which was a daughter, when I turned 29. And she's 27 today, by the way. And so he and I ended up getting a divorce. And after we divorced, I really, really took a dive. So I went from controlled drinking, functioning alcoholic. You know, I held a job for years with a credit union. And then after I left him, I started drinking in the mornings and started drinking in the afternoon. And then I was, like, hiding my bottle. And I was drinking Canadian whiskey was my favorite. And it started out with the whiskey and 7-Up. And then before too long, the 7-Up just wasn't cutting it. You know, it was sweet. I was getting headaches, and I wasn't getting drunk fast enough. So it ended up being just straight, you know, whiskey. And it just, and that was my problem, too. I loved the taste of alcohol. You know, I hear people say they don't like the taste of alcohol. Well, I loved it. I loved the taste of, I don't care what it was, beer, whiskey. I'm a garden variety drunk. Whiskey, beer, wine, it didn't matter. I mean, honestly, if you could have given me an IV and gone straight to my veins, it would have been better for me. But so what I started doing, though, because people were smelling me and they were like, aren't you drinking a little bit too much there, Michelle? And so I decided, you know, these people are noticing that I'm, you know, probably drinking too much. So I started hiding it in bottles. So I would take the whiskey and I would pour it into either a Snapple bottle or one of those Martinelli apple bottles, you know, the apple juice. And it looks just like, I mean, right? It looks just like whiskey. And I could drive down the road in my car and lift that Snapple bottle up and just drink away, and nobody ever knew what I was doing. So what happened was I had a job that was very stressful, and I started drinking even worse. And I went to work one day, and I started shaking. I was sitting at my desk, and I started shaking. And I started not feeling very good at all. And I was like, you know, what's going on? I thought maybe I was getting the flu or something. So I told my coworker, I'm not feeling very good. I think I need to go home. So I went home. I went to sleep for about 5 hours. I woke up and I was feeling better. And what did I do? I start drinking. Well, this kept kind of happening for the next couple weeks. And I was kind of thinking, you know what? Something's going on here. And I would try to quit drinking, and I couldn't. And I tried to quit, and I couldn't. And during all of this, I was going to court, and my ex-husband and I, our divorce finally became final, and I got custody of our daughter. She was 4 and a half at the time. And so it was one weekend when my ex-husband had his weekend with her, and I knew I needed to do something because I couldn't stop. I don't care what I tried to do, I could not stop drinking. So I was living with my mom, and I went to my mom, and I told her, hey, I'm having a problem. I can't stop drinking, and I think I need some help. And she said, okay, where's your bottle? So I grabbed the Snapple bottle out of my purse. I grabbed the bottle out from my closet. I'm literally a closet drinker because I would sneak in the closet and drink so she couldn't see me. Under the front seat of my car, in the trunk of my car, under my bed, I was sleeping with my bottle. And her mouth dropped open, and she said, I knew you had a problem, but I didn't realize it was this bad. So we took the gallon of whiskey and poured it out in the sink, next day, I woke up and now, by the way, I told you that like nobody in my family was alcoholic. To me, an alcoholic was the old bum or the old lady, you know, you see out in the street or in the gutter pushing the cart around, with the brown paper bag or these days the black, you know, plastic bag and drinking. That to me was an alcoholic. I didn't realize that I could become an alcoholic. And so, when I woke up the next morning, I wasn't feeling good at all. Same thing, the shakes. I didn't know what was going on. So I couldn't even get a cup of coffee up to my mouth. I mean, my hand was literally like this. And I told my mom I need to go back to bed. I don't know what's wrong. I'm not feeling good. I went back to sleep, woke up about 2 o'clock that afternoon, sat down to have some leftover pizza that we had from the night before, and then I don't remember what happened. And my mom told me that I looked at her, and I just went, "Mom," and I fell, hit my face on the coffee table, and I started flopping around like a fish out of water. And what was happening was I was having grandma seizures. Had no idea that a person could die from detoxing off of alcohol. And so I went through one. She gets on the phone with 911. I stopped. While she was on the phone with 911, I started again. I had apparently 3 grandma seizures right in front of my mom. And after the 3rd one, she said that I just laid there and I wasn't breathing. And 911 was telling her, leave her alone. Let her body go through what it's going through. It has to go through its process or whatever they were saying to her. And she said, you know, F that. She grabbed my shoulder and she shook me. And she said that I lifted my head up and I took a deep breath. And not that long afterwards, an ambulance got there. And so I learned about grandma seizures. I learned about detoxing. I learned pretty much that I was an alcoholic. And so these paramedics get me on this gurney and they take me off to the hospital. And while en route to the hospital, they were kind of preaching to me, you know, you can never drink again, right? I was like, right, right, right. I know I can never drink again. I think I stayed sober less than 30 days and I was drinking again. So what happened was I went into Salvation Army, and I don't know if any of you have been in the Salvation Army program or if you're aware of it, but what an amazing program. Like, it's long-term and, you know, it's inpatient. So I actually was in Salvation Army twice, and I was in Teen Challenge once, and not that I'm a teenager or anything, but that program is a pretty good program too. But while I was in Teen Challenge, that's when I really learned about AA. In that program, within your first 30 days, you're in a blackout. And after you're done with your blackout, they don't just encourage you, they make you get a sponsor and they make you go to meetings and you learn about God. For them, it is a Christian program. So, and I was okay with that because I was raised with religion, not a spiritual relationship with God, like Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. But, you know, I knew who God was. And I never blamed him for anything. And I've always known that God was there. It's just that, you know, I was not a good person. And I never reached out to him. I didn't think that I would get much help. So I continued in the program. I graduated, and a year and a half, I stayed sober. When I got out of the program, I continued with my sponsor only for a short period. I went to meetings only for a short period. And then I started getting like on this, I think everybody calls what they say, a pink cloud. And I started thinking, you know what, I'm not really alcoholic. You know, I was just going through something and I'm not really alcoholic. So I stopped calling my sponsor. I stopped going to meetings, and I was not a very happy person for quite a while. I was white knuckling it. And I'm sure that some of you have heard the term dry drunk. Well, that's exactly what I was. And I did this for probably about 6 months. And I was working for the Salvation Army when I was doing this. And one night, I was like, you know, I can drink. I know I'll be okay. So I bought myself a little half pint of whiskey. And drank it that night, the whole half pint, woke up the next morning, and I felt pretty good. You know, I wasn't hungover. I could feel the alcohol, but I wasn't hungover, and I felt pretty good. And I'm like, see, I'm not an alcoholic. Went like 3 days, piece of cake, I'm fine. So then I went and bought a pint. Did the same thing. That night, I drank the whole pint. Woke up the next morning, still okay, still functioning. I remembered everything I did the night before. And I waited a few more days, and I'm like, see, I'm not an alcoholic. And then I bought the quart. And then I bought the gallon. So I was back to where I was. Went to work, drinking. Salvation Army, zero tolerance for drinking, right? Well, one day I'm at my cash register and all my coworkers are kind of gathered around me and they're all watching me. And honestly, like, I was already drinking that morning and everything was kind of blurry, but I remember the trailer guy, Chuck, was, cracking jokes about me. And he was saying something about, you know, how I reeked. And, this guy that worked there, his name was John. He kind of had a crush on me, and he was, like, sticking up for me. And he goes, oh, no, 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 that's just her perfume. And the Chuck, the trailer guy, goes, oh, what is it, O'Day Seagram 7? And sure enough, like, they, I mean, it was a dead giveaway. And so they ended up calling the main guy down at the warehouse. He was the manager of the program, and he came down, and they wanted to test me, and I was like, sure, you can test me. I didn't think they would really go through with it, right? So they put me in his car, and they were going to take me down to the center, and they were going to test me. And I was like, oh, we get to 41 to start, and they were really going to do it. And I go, okay, Terry, I just got to tell you, I drank last night. And I lied, you know, I mean, I drank that morning. And I said, so you're going to, you know, you're going to have alcohol in my blood. So I ended up getting fired. And from there, you guys, I just, it was just a nightmare. I lost custody of my daughter. I lost that job. I lost 3 more jobs. I have a metal plate in the side of my head, by the way. I was riding a bicycle at 0.24. Put the brakes on, stopped on a dime. Bike flipped, I endoed, impacted my chin, totally displaced and fractured my jaw over here. I broke my foot, 2 DUIs, first one was a 0.36, second one was a 0.24, that one was an accident. I was going about 50 miles an hour on 41, there was a couple, head stopped right in front of me, in traffic, I didn't even see him. I think, well, I think I know, I blacked out. And I hit them at 50 miles an hour. And I could have killed them. So went to jail that night. Oh, and by the way, I stopped drinking the whiskey. I was told how whiskey smells and vodka doesn't. So I switched to the vodka. And instead of the Snapple water bottle, I was putting it in Aquafina water bottles. And I'd have my big jug of whiskey in the trunk. But it didn't matter, you know, not smelling vodka, smelling whiskey. It, no matter how much I drank, it permeated out of my pores. And I could eat mints and spray perfume, and you just could smell it. And so, anyways, I from there, got out of jail the next morning, and my sister gave me the phone number to a woman who she said one of her coworkers knew, and she was a sponsor in AA. And she said, but this time, Michelle, you really need to do this. You need to call this woman. You really need to do this. So I called this woman. I didn't know her. She didn't know me from Adam. I told her a little bit about what was going on with me. And I had a job at that time. And I don't know how I managed to keep it, you know, through all of this because I was drinking on the job. I truly believe in my heart that it was God who encamped angels around that couple in front of me, their van, and around my car. And he was telling me, I'm going to give you a chance. This is your last chance. And so this woman, like, she was married. She had kids. She lived in Fresno, but worked in a prison down south, not Coalinga, Corcoran. She worked in Corcoran, and she commuted every day. Well, this woman, and I was hard suspended, by the way, so it was my second DUI, and they hard suspended me for a year, and I couldn't drive. And she would pick me up from work two nights a week. She taught me about commitment meetings. So it's insanity. The first step, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. I definitely qualified for both of those. And I knew that. I couldn't hold jobs. I lost custody of my daughter. I couldn't keep relationships. You know, I slept with a bottle, right? And like, I still didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to be defeated. So that's what was happening with me before. Now, this time, I don't know what changed. I really don't know what changed. Maybe it was because I almost killed someone. I think I was getting really tired. And so she would take me to two meetings a week. She told me how important it was to have commitment meetings. And if you miss those meetings, it should only be because you're sick or you're going out of town. And it's kind of funny because my husband, who's in the program, told me the same thing. And then she said, go to as many meetings as you want after that, but make sure you have your commitment meetings. When you're there, be in service. It's a birthday meeting. Cut the cake. Serve the cake. Help make coffee. Help pour coffee. Clean up afterwards. There's the meeting after the meeting. And then she would take me home, right? And then she would drive home and sometimes not get home to her husband and her daughter until, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night. And she never once asked me for gas money either. Never once. And I'm like, why is this woman doing this? You know, I really didn't understand. So she, also taught me something, too, that I didn't know about, because when I came into AA, I thought I was just going to stop drinking. And what I didn't know was there was more to Alcoholics Anonymous than just not drinking. So she taught me about emotional sobriety. And I was an emotional wreck. And I was very immature for my age emotionally, due to my drinking. And so she was going to a conference up north in Grass Valley, and she said, Michelle, there's this speaker that I've been hearing about. His name is Wayne Butler, and he does a conference on emotional sobriety. And she said, I've got a couple tickets. My husband was going to go, and he can't go, and I would love for you to go with me. So all you need to do basically is just have some money for food, and I'd like you to go with me. That weekend was such a life changer for me because, you know, I've been hearing from going to meetings about not only being in service, you know, it's more than pouring coffee and serving cake. like Israel had said to you earlier, one of my favorite sayings is trust God, clean house, and help others. So trust God is steps 1, 2, and 3. And then cleaning house is 4 through 11. And then helping others, step 12. And that, like, scared me to death. I can't even take care of myself. How am I going to take care of someone else? Well, when you put it to someone like that, like it was put to me, is that all you need to do is stay one step ahead of another alcoholic. It's just all about experience, strength, and hope. And so if you're one step ahead of another alcoholic, you can help them. You can help them get through the steps. And so that made it not so fearful for me, you know. And that weekend we laughed. Like there was, I don't know, 100 people at this conference. And it was mixed. It was men and women. And we went out to ice cream. We went out to dinner. And it wasn't just sticking around the conference. We had meetings after the meeting. And, like, we just had the best weekend. And I went home, and I felt like a totally different person. And I was on my fourth step. And so it really nudged me to get through my fourth step because, I'd heard all this stigma about the fourth step and how many people don't make it through their fourth step and, you know, without drinking and, you know, that, you know, this step is so, like, scary. And I sat down and I started writing my inventory and, you know, it was one of the most fulfilling and amazing steps for me because when I got to that fourth column, I found out I had character defects. And I'm like, I have character defects? Like, I'm selfish? What? I didn't know I was selfish. As a matter of fact, one of my meetings that I went to, my commitment meetings, and by the way, in the beginning, because I wasn't married and it was before I met my husband, I went to mixed meetings only. And one of those was a topic meeting, and the topic one night was selfishness. And someone called on me, and I started sharing how, well, you know, I don't really think that I'm very selfish. And the whole room started, like, roaring. They were just laughing. And I was like, what? You know, and so I didn't know what they were laughing about, but I finished my share. And after the meeting, this old-timer walked up to me, and he introduced himself. And he said, so you don't think you're selfish, huh? And I was like, no, not really. And he said, so when you were driving down the road with one eye closed and your four-year-old daughter sitting in the back seat in a car seat, that's not selfish. When you were driving down the road, you know, drinking and out till all hours and your mom didn't know where you were and she was worried about you, that's not selfish. And I'm thinking to myself, who the hell does this guy think he is? Jeez, he doesn't even know me, right? Well, I went home that night with a resentment toward this man. And I got in the car with my sponsor, and I was like, yeah, and you know what he said? And she was like, whoa, calm down, Michelle. She goes, I've known John for years, and I can guarantee you he didn't mean it that way. He was just trying to kind of point out, you know, and show you, like, seriously, Michelle, your decisions and your actions and everything that you've done, what has it gotten you? I mean, seriously, you can't drive. And then she wasn't pulling any punches. And that's what I loved about her, though, too, because she did not co-sign any of my whining, my justifications, my excuses. You know, she just called it like it was. And